Hey everyone, welcome back. Great to be with you, and thanks for joining me for another episode of the podcast. This week I am super thrilled to share with you an interview and conversation and presentation that I did back at the Epic Community Gathering in December. At that event, I had a whole bunch of stuff prepared, but it ended up just being a massive Q&A all about sleeping soundly. So I know that that is one of the most important topics for people right now. I know people are really struggling with sleeping soundly, and there just are so many questions, which is actually what I did in this session. I ended up just answering questions, and it went really great, and I wanted to make sure that I shared that with the community because I know that so many of you also struggle with sleep and want to learn a little bit more. So in this session, I do a little bit of a presentation, and we go completely into Q&A. And if you have questions that aren't answered in this session, please ping me on social at Dr. Greg Wells, and I will do my best to either answer them directly or create some more content for you to answer those questions. This year, so much of the work that I'm doing is about building the community and making sure that there's a conversation going back and forth. So that's why this is the way that it is and what we're going to be doing for the next 7 episodes of the podcast coming up. You have some really cool episodes coming on different topics, but largely just around focusing in on answering all of your questions to make sure that you're able to move forward the best that you can. So without any further delay, please enjoy my epic Q&A on sleeping soundly. Today is going to be all about the body and the foundation for your physical health that I want you to establish. Again, 10 events like this. A decade of research, a decade of practice, the one single foundational principle upon which you can build health, well-being, and high performance. If you do this, everything else is possible. If we don't do this, everything else is extraordinarily difficult. It's sleeping soundly. If you can sleep well, you will feel good, and you will be able to move forwards and navigate a very difficult circumstance, which is the world right now. And I say a difficult circumstance deliberately because 10 years ago, right after I finished this event, not this event, but the earlier precursor to this event, at this hotel, I drove home and I just met Richard Branson. I just spoken at my first really big event. I just finished commentating an Olympics and I was driving home and I was like, my life had changed. I felt it. Like things were absolutely different. I knew that my life had just changed trajectories and I was on a very, very different upwards path. And I got home and there was a Christmas party happening. And my God, Ingrid was so sick. And I got home and she was crying. And I held her. She had a huge seizure as I was holding her. And I ran her through the party. I was like, get the hell out of my way. And got her into the car and I drove her to my hospital, sick kids. And I always know that whenever my friends call me from the hospital, emerge, and they're like, where'd emerge? I'm like, how long have you been waiting? And they're like, 3 hours. I'm like, that's fine, there's nothing wrong. It'll be okay. And they zipped us right in. I was like, oh shit. And I was with Ingrid and we had the bed set up and I was holding her and she had a massive, massive seizure. And the code blue and crash team and everything else like that came in and I just put out my hands as they came in around me and I just sort of stepped back, you know, out of the way to navigate the situation. That's her a few days later watching ants, and she ultimately ended up recovering from viral encephalitis. H1N1 went in through her nasal nerve and into her brain and inflamed her brain, and there was some hearing deficits. She's ultimately okay, but my God, that was hard. And afterwards, as Greg, the physiologist, is sitting there in his own hospital trying to figure out, how am I going to get Ingrid healthy again? And I'm scanning the research about the brain. I encountered the fact that we all have this incredible system inside of our body called the lymphatic system. This is the system that keeps your body healthy. This is the system that keeps your body clean. It fights off colds, flus. It picks up viruses, bacteria, broken down cells, waste products, pulls that into your lymphatic system where white blood cells from your immune system fight off all the invaders. This is the system that keeps your body healthy and clean. It's why your doctor feels the lymph glands in your neck to see if you're fighting off a cold or the flu. It's why we're concerned about breast cancer spreading to the lymph nodes and the underarm. The system fights off cancer. It's incredibly important. But if you'll look at the image, you'll notice that it's everywhere except the brain. And up and around that time that Ingrid was so sick, there was a number of discoveries that were made about how the brain accomplishes what the body accomplishes in terms of keeping itself healthy.
This is an MRI scan of the brain done by Mike Noseworthy at McMaster University just down the road. I do a lot of MRI research, so I'm going to show you a lot of videos of the inside of the body today, just because I'm fascinated. I love it. I think it's super interesting. Ingrid's brain was actually scarred right in what's called the corpus callosum, which joins the two sides together, sort of that red zone right in the middle. So I was like, how are we going to get her better? And what I discovered was that when we sleep, the 100 billion neurons that you have inside your brain that control thinking, problem solving, concentration, focus, alertness, music, drama, all of it, shrink by about 60%, and all the space opens up inside your brain. And a clear fluid called cerebral spinal fluid washes through your brain every single night while you sleep. That has become known as the glymphatic system. You can now image this, and you can actually see neurons changing shapes and fluids washing through the brain every single night while we sleep. It's actually like legit brainwashing, but like in a good way, right? So it's like, actually, this is brainwashing. And it's like, yes, it actually happens. That fluid then moves up to the inside of your skull and a network of vessels that are connected to the lymphatic system in the body. So the brain washes itself out and cleans itself out every single night while we sleep. This happens slightly better if you sleep on your side and you sleep less, your partner loves you more. That's another benefit of that. And so once I saw all of this data, I was like, okay, cool. Sleep is the priority for us as a family. So I got an Oura ring and I started measuring my data. And this is what some of the data looked like early on in this journey. And as you can see, stressed, Greg, staring at the ceiling for 3 hours trying to fall asleep every single night. I'm not sure if you've been there before, but when you're stressed, you're like, can't fall asleep. That was absolutely me. Another situation that people often encounter in this space is that you wake up 2 o'clock in the morning and you're replaying the events of the day or planning the events for tomorrow. And I did something different. So I wrote this up on my iPad, ironically enough, when I wasn't sleeping. And I was like, this is the plan. This is how we're going to move forwards. And again, if you've seen me, you've probably seen me present this before, but the idea was to sleep awesome, recover and regenerate. 6 o'clock, screens are off. 7 o'clock, time with the kids and Judith, my wife. Just to be clear about who I'm talking about, Judith. Meditation, gratitude, journaling, all those sorts of things. Hot bath, cool shower, because decreasing body temperature increases melatonin release such that I can fall asleep and to stay asleep. And as soon as I executed this plan, the sleep was instantaneously into that deep sleep when the brain is washing itself out. This is like a week later. It's like, I have the solution. The priority is sleep. It took us like 6 months to get this happening. Do all the different things like blackout blinds, 20 degrees Celsius, consistent bedtimes, all those sorts of things. But this was the path that led to Ingrid healing and recovering and regenerating and getting better. And I now know that this is also crucial to a whole host of other things as well. We know that we need 5 complete sleep cycles. So there's 5 different types of sleep, REM in stage 1, 2, 3, 4. They're all important. They're all different. They all do different things. They're all critical. REM is typically when we encode memories from the day. Stage 1 and stage 2 is when there's a lot of physical recovery. And stage 3 and stage 4 is when there's a lot of mental recovery. And we cycle through those throughout the course of the night, roughly 90-minute increments. We need 5 complete sleep cycles, roughly 90 minutes each, to have the lowest risk for all-cause mortality. So for me at the time, I was like, good, reduce the risk of mortality. Awesome. For all of you, let's live a very, very, very long time. And so we know 7 to 8 hours, best possible chance of living the longest possible life. Lowest risk of cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, neurodegenerative diseases, all of those factors together. We've also discovered that when we're in deep sleep, when the brain is washing itself out, that's when new neural connections are made, which is how we physically encode memories. So if you pick up information throughout the course of the day, you actually learn nothing during the course of the day. I said that accidentally at a school, and the kids were like, yes, we know, we learn nothing when we're here. And I was like, no, that's not what I meant. I meant that when you're sleeping at night, that's when the neurons grow inside the brain, and that's when we actually heal, recover, and regenerate. So learning happens in that first half of sleep. That's when those neurons make new connections and we physically encode learning in the first half of sleep. The second half of sleep is when we're creative and we problem solve. Whole host of entrepreneurs, whole host of creators in this room, this is essential for us. This is why we in this room especially need to give ourselves permission to get enough sleep, because it is in the second half of sleep, especially in and around the REM sleep stages, when we are creative, when we problem solve, when we set the stage for coming up with new solutions to old problems. This enables us to ideate, to innovate. So giving yourself permission to get enough sleep is fundamentally critical for our ability to activate multiple different regions of the brain at the same time, which is what we do when we're being creative. I'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow, so I won't get into that too much right now. Trust me, it's super cool. I'll explain that more tomorrow. The other really cool thing that I discovered is that naps work beautifully. There's loads of research that shows the benefits of naps, but there's two types of naps that work, one type of nap that does not. Has anyone taken a nap and felt horrible for hours afterwards? Yes? Okay, so that's the sleep. That's the nap where you wake up out of stage 3-4 deep sleep when the brain is washing itself out. The neurons have shrunk, you wake up, you have sleep inertia, you feel kind of nauseous, you have brain fog, you can't really understand what's going on, right? You just don't feel very good. That's that zone. The 20-minute power nap, set an alarm, 20 minutes or less, clears out adenosine. So you have this molecule in your body called ATP. You break it to create energy. The leftover piece is called adenosine. When you do lots of mental work, you break ATP and adenosine levels go up. When you sleep, you clear out that adenosine. A 20-minute power nap will do that. Actually, as little as 3 minutes will do it, but up to 20 minutes. And that keeps you from falling into deep sleep, which is awesome. So don't be afraid to leverage the power nap. 20 minutes less, use an alarm. Second type of nap that works is the full sleep cycle nap. 75 minutes to 90 minutes, wake up naturally with no alarm. And that gets both mental recovery through clearance of adenosine and also physical recovery because there's a growth hormone pulse that heals, repairs, and regenerates physical tissues, which is why pro athletes will often do the 90-minute nap before they compete in the evenings. So that's the idea behind that. You can probably use that on the weekends, especially if you've had a tough week and you need a chance to sort of boost your recovery. I will do that often on airplanes. But as much as we now know why we need to sleep, the brain washes itself out. We know how much sleep we actually need, roughly 7 to 8 hours. By the way, the younger you are, the more you sleep that you need. But that's okay. There's a graph for that if you need me to show that to you later on. We also have some habits that maybe aren't serving us when it comes to sleep, this specifically being one of them. And as much as Stu talked earlier about what would it look like if you were off your phones for a period of time, I would encourage you to consider what would it look like if you were off your phones for an hour before you wanted to fall asleep. And back into the MRI studies, we know that if we look at the brain, this is an MRI scan of the brain, sliced it ahead at the level of the eyes, you're looking at, oh, I'm in a brain, look at that, that was cool. Sliced it ahead at the level of the eyes, if we zoom in, you can actually see them up top. When we have these devices and we shine them into our eyes late at night, the light goes from the device into your eye, hits the back of your eyeball right there in a structure that looks like this, that converts light into electricity that shoots back through your optic nerve into the pineal gland that controls the release of melatonin, which makes it very difficult for you to fall asleep if you have devices shining into your eyes late at night. So my first core practice for you, the first core discipline, is to defend your last hour. Please, 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 moving forwards, consider that maybe screens aren't serving you if you are using them in the hour before you fall asleep at night. First thing in the morning, grab your phone, shove it in your eyes, I don't care. But last thing, right at night before you fall asleep, we want to try to avoid that at all costs. Should you do this, building on that data that I showed you before, this is what happens. You'll notice that throughout the course of the night, from 9 p.m. until 9 or 5 a.m., this is some of my data, we are just gradually lowering and lowering and lowering our heart rate, such that right before you wake up, it's significantly lower, like 20 to 30% lower than it was when you go to sleep. That's the pattern that we see when we're recovering, when we're regenerating, when we're healing, when we are repairing, when we're refueling. If you have a wearable device and you want to track this, what you're looking for is the lowest possible heart rate in the latter half of sleep. I know that if I'm below 50 beats per minute, everything's good. If I'm above 50 beats per minute, I'm either stressed or about to get sick. This is what we tracked with the Olympic team. We used to use our fingers and a stopwatch for a minute. You count your pulse, or now you can just use your Fitbit or your Garmin or your Apple Watch or whatever. They've all got different tools in which you can do these measurements. And what you're actually looking for is a fundamental shift in your nervous system from the sympathetic stress system over to your parasympathetic rest, recover, and regenerate system, which we see. Because as you can see, when we're super stressed out, your heart rate goes up. When you're a little bit more relaxed, your heart rate slows down. You can actually measure this. You can see this. You can practice. You can learn. You can experiment. You can explore see what works for you. I know that if I sleep in a cold room, my heart rate drops and it is awesome, except that Judith hates it. And she steals all my blankets and then my sheets, right? And so I'm shivering and I wake up early and then I just go to the gym. The other aspect of this that many of you have probably heard of before is heart rate variability, which does the opposite. Your heart rate variability actually goes up throughout the course of the night, which is good because when we are rested, when we have low stress levels, there are fewer signals coming out of the brain down through the spinal cord out into your body, which means that your heart beats on its own, not through drive from the brain, and so it is more variable. Think about if you're nervous or you get suddenly scared, your heart will go beat, 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 pounding in your chest very rhythmically. So when you're stressed, your variability is low. When you're relaxed, your heart is beat, 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 beat. It's kind of all over the place, so variability is high. So what we're looking for in that case is high heart rate variability. If my heart rate variability is over 100, all is good, and I know that I've had a great night's sleep, and I'm going to feel pretty good throughout the course of the day. If you don't have a wearable and you want the exact same data, you can wake up, and 30 minutes after you wake up, you can ask yourself, how do I feel? And if you say, good, you get the exact same information. So you don't need all of this tech. You can simply pay attention to how you feel. It's like when you use a, do I need a Garmin to figure out how hard you're running? No, you can just, are you breathing hard? Get the exact same info. But the core message that I have for you here is I just want you to defend your last hour. Now in the workbook in front of you, you don't have to do it now. On page 20, there is a deep sleep planner. And the deep sleep planner is designed to get you to think through one simple exercise. And the one simple exercise are, what are the few 2 to 3 things that you want to be doing right before you fall asleep to deactivate your physiology and your psychology? Taking a bath, journaling, talking to your partner or loved one, or not, depending on how things are going. Could be very different, right? And once you have that protocol, reading fiction, like whatever it happens to be, meditation works too, prayer, looking out the window at trees, all of it works beautifully. Once you know what those ideas might be, I would like you to practice them and put them into play and see how you do.
All right, everyone, thanks for tuning in. I really hope that was helpful. Obviously, it's a little bit of a different format, but super psyched to be able to share that information with you. I hope that it was helpful. If it was, please share this with your community. Please let someone else know about the show. Let someone else know about the episode. Forward it to them. And that helps us tremendously. If you could also leave a review on your podcast platform of choice, whether that's iTunes or Spotify, that also makes a massive difference for us and really helps us out. And of course, if you can follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells or on LinkedIn / Dr. Greg Wells, that would be tremendously wonderful as well. Ping me with questions. Make sure that this is all about you, and we will continue to build content for you this year that helps you to be healthy, to perform better, and to get to a place where your well-being is exactly where you want it to be. All right, everyone. Thanks again. We'll see you in the next episode really, really soon.